Hello Pod, I'm Chris Hewitt and welcome to an Empire Podcast interview special. Justin Tipping's Him has just opened here in the UK a couple of weeks after it made its bow in the States. A Jordan Peele-produced, darkly comedic horror film about American football, it stars Tyreek Withers as Cam Wade, an up-and-coming quarterback who is taken under the wing of his idol, Isaiah White, played by Marlon Wayans, only to find that the price of becoming the GOAT, greatest of all time, might just be too big to pay. In this interview special, our very own GOAT, Jamie Graham, makes his Empire Podcast interview debut by talking to both Withers and Wayans together and Tipping solo. You're going to hear that interview first, and it's a belter as Jamie and Justin dig into Tipping's thematic intentions for the film, working with Jordan Peele as producer, Tipping's reaction to mixed reviews, and his realization that he might just have accidentally remade one of his favorite films. Here you go. It's a belter. Enjoy.
So let's start right at the beginning. This film, Monkey Paw Productions, kind of bought it up immediately. It was on the blacklist for a while. So tell me, how did you get involved with it and what was the instant appeal?
Yeah. The story, I guess, goes back to 2017 when my first feature came out. It's called Kicks, and he had just won the Academy Award for Get Out and just started Monkey Paw Productions.
Yeah.
So around that same time, he just wanted to meet other up-and-coming filmmakers and in a producing capacity. We met then and was amazing. He said, you know, was a fan and loved the movie. He talked about movies and cinephiled out and said, let's find something. So the seed was planted then. And then years later, you know, this story, they get a hold of, and they were looking for a writer-director to make it their own. And I came from, I grew up playing sports, you know, my whole life. You know, my first word was ball and all the things. I was a soccer player. There was a period in college where I quickly realized I was the worst one in college, even though I was maybe the best one in high school. But abandoned that and found film.
Yeah.
And then that became the passion, and like a lot of that energy went there.
Sure.
Became the film projectionist and all the things. So when I first saw this script and this concept, it was like an immediate excitement.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my, wait, what? And I think what was most exciting was like, I was like, oh, kind of like, and I couldn't really point to a comp. Well, at least the thing that I saw in my head, where I was like, oh, there's nothing really like that quite like this mashup.
Yeah.
And I think that was the most exciting and terrifying thing.
Yeah. How was it actually working with Jordan? I mean, as a producer, I imagine he kind of lets you run with it, but he's obviously there if you need him, bounce ideas. I mean,
yeah,
that must be wonderful.
Yeah. It's a champagne problems.
Yeah.
Because he would, he does come from a filmmaking point of view, so it was like very hands off in terms of like process. And then, you know, I get a draft finished and I could then sit down with him and we could page turn and he could give notes, or I could be like, you know, these were the studio notes, how to like, but if I do this, it undoes that. And from a place of like, well, if you want to say this, what if you tried that?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, a very like, I think like a goated soundboard. He's the GOAT at being a soundboard. And it's like getting in a really amazing tennis rally where I'm like, oh, and I was thinking about this. And he's like, oh, that's crazy. Here's this idea. And I'm like, that's crazy. Here's this idea. And it just kept.
Raises your game, doesn't it?
It gets you on your toes, and it's like, oh, this is so fun. And it also comes to moments like in the edit, you know, like that last scene was definitely, I was like, mad scientist freaking out, no sleep for weeks, with like 20 different versions cut, and having someone like Jordan come in at the end to, and I can be like, one too many Tim Heidecker dick jokes is going to throw it this way. And like too much time on Julia's knife in a neck is like, now we're like beyond camp. Now we're in a different. So trying to get through, there's so many, you know, tones to calibrate. Having him be able to like,
to
give feedback back and be like, oh, what if you tried this?
And talking of ideas, I mean, you say you kind of had those ideas back and forth and saying, what about this? What about this? I mean, there's so many themes in this film. Was that kind of the instant appeal? There's so much meat to get your teeth into.
Absolutely. And I felt like that it is also like what an audience brings to it, because I'm aware of certain themes, but also aware that if someone doesn't get that theme or like here, they can find an allegory, easily find the allegory in another way.
Yeah.
Whether it be like socioeconomic or through the body horror, or through, you know, the celebrity, like there, it is, I guess, the quintessential American cultural experience, like American football.
Yeah.
And so when that becomes the guiding like principle for a story, all the things that come with American culture are up for examination.
Yeah. One of the things that runs through this film, it's almost like an occult horror film in a way that paganism is in there, with this idea of giving blood sacrifices, and you play with the term goat, which of course in sport means greatest of all time, but there's animal sacrifices.
Yeah.
I mean, that must have been fun to kind of stir that round the pot.
Oh, yeah. We also knew, like the Monkey Paw universe itself, like we are like approaching development knowing people are going to go deep dive.
Yeah.
So we all, that's almost the most fun, because even when I'm working with my production designer or DP, like we are like aware that the conspiracy theories around, you know, billionaires or millionaires taking the blood of younger people in Silicon Valley, like absolutely aware that that is a, you know, in the zeitgeist.
Yeah.
And that, how do some of these people stay so young? How do they, and it was absolutely both leaning into to have the fun and expose these different, or exploit the different things on a societal level. And I think that's the fun of also what Jordan's so, and Monkey Paw are so good at.
You say, how do people stay so young? I mean, Marlon Wayans in this film, it's incredible. I think he's like 53 or something in real life. And he doesn't look much different to what he did in Requiem for a Dream.
No.
Apart from he's far more pumped up now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, why Marlon and why Tyreek as well? And the other as a kind of generational quarterback who wants to become the GOAT.
Yeah. I think to, like, first and foremost, like the 90% of directing is casting has been ingrained in me, and they both had some parallel, or I knew we're going to bring something unique, but also inherently built into the characters. So for Marlon, he's already a GOAT in the entertainment and comedy, and he knows nothing but greatness, born in the youngest of his brothers and hanging out with Richard Pryor since he was like a kid. So good or bad, he had access and proximity to this wealth, celebrity, and greatness and what it takes. So I knew he had that. And being a fan of like Requiem, I knew it was there. It's just, he hasn't really had the opportunity.
The dramatic chops.
And so it was most exciting to think of it that way, since he already is vampiric. by nature, and not the other way, because people did kind of instinctually be like, oh, well, should we cast someone who looks and embodies like a pro athlete? And for me, it was the not thematically on point. Like, I really did want to go older and to go with someone who already had this greatness about them, and I'd rather physically get him there.
I think Tyreek was surprised people in this because, I mean, we all know he's like good-looking, strapping guy, but he really gets quite deep in this. I mean, goes places I didn't expect.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's exactly what I was hoping from this character, where He wasn't yet big, and he was very unknown, and, you know, it was very much I had to fight or like pitch these ideas.
Yeah.
And he had played sports, and he had come from that world. And I think that lack of exposure to the industry and Hollywood and all the things were perfect, because the character itself was an innocence. It was a loss of innocence and a fish out of water. So getting someone like him who's so grounded and of the locker room talk and all that swagger that you cannot direct, you know, the haptics and things, like he just has it. And then throwing him into a world surrounded by personalities like Julia Fox, Marlon Wayans, and Tim Heidecker and Jim Jefferies is just like, yeah, he's going to look around on set. And it's real. Like, it's just, he's thrown into a world. And it was analogous to these characters.
I mean, obviously, for this production, you'd want the guys to go away and train and come back looking the part. Mm-hmm. But did it surprise you when they turned up first day of set? I mean, Marlon particularly, for a guy, I keep banging on about it. He's in his 50s, but
yeah.
He is ripped.
No, it's nuts what he went through. Because we knew that's the direction we wanted to go. And I was in the, you know, prepping, like preparing for if he wasn't going to look that way. Yeah. And trying, you know, wrapping my head around how
shooting
we would execute.
From the neck up.
Yeah, like,
yeah.
How do you execute this scene? How do you, but so he went through this insane transformation, like insane. It's insane. And I would get updates like every week, like, oh my gosh, like check this out. And he could speak to it more, but he really went through like a spiritual and physical transformation.
And to go back to the themes, I mean, we touched upon paganism, but there's other religions as well. There's kind of Christianity in here. Mm-hmm. I find it very interesting. It's kind of conflated with American jingoism. Mm-hmm. And obviously, it's caused a little bit of controversy. Like, there's one scene where it reenacts the Last Supper, and I think people have walked out of screenings. I mean,
yeah,
that's what art's for, isn't it? To be
it
provocative
is.
At times.
Thank God I'm in the UK, where they appreciate it.
Yeah.
I much come from the camp of love me or hate me, but don't think nothing of me.
Yeah.
Apathy is, I can't.
Nothing worse than a boring film. We want films that
at least I took risks, I guess, you know. But yeah, I think I was aware, you know, that you were coming, we're taking on something that is sacred to American culture. And it's God, family, football. And look, I was raised Catholic, uh-huh. So I'm also traumatized.
that was a Catholic joke.
Yeah. Full of guilt,
man.
I'm sure.
Oh, man. Oh, my
full
God. So much guilt. Love is sacrifice. turns out it's not. but so those themes, I they're inherent to who I am. I knew that it might turn some people away.
It must help to have someone like Jordan behind you and, you know, Universal supporting it, because you know you're going to get some flack, don't you?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think this movie exists, or like how I was able to make it. I don't think that's possible unless Jordan Peele is a producer.
Yeah.
Like his stature, his caliber, his pun not intended, but now it is. made that happen, and the fact that Universal Studios had like really like a blind faith kind of, because I was making choices and that were like, I couldn't point to a comp, like, no, like this. So there was a trust and like,
talking of explosive themes, I mean, there's also that whole thing. It's very interesting that the saviors, the football team, are ran by a kind of cabal of middle-aged white guys. Mm-hmm. And there's that whole theme where, whether you call it exploitation in sport, or you could even say that football is modern-day slavery in a way, if you want to be really explosive.
Yeah.
I mean, would you go along with that?
Yeah, well, before I made this movie, the amount of like exposés from the New York Times, Washington Post, there's that idea was already in the ether, in the culture. So I do like to say I just held up a mirror. Like, I'm not introducing new things. And that's also some of the criticisms, like, what's new here? I'm like, I don't know if the same audiences are reading those articles and going that in depth, but I think that's for the new audiences who are finding the movie, if they do want to, if it elicits, and hopefully it does, have a conversation about some deeper themes and what's going on in professional sports. That's the thing. Like, I have no problem. I'm like, the game is a game. Games are games. Like, boxers are going to box knowing what's at stake. Guys are going to free solo and fall off. That's just the human nature. But I think it's the commodification and the business around these athletes that we all participate in,
yeah,
and ignore and brush aside some issues, all in service of the profit.
Do you think it's possible to get to the top of sport without having that kind of toxic masculinity or that drive or mm-hmm. that competitiveness?
Yeah.
You know, because you kind of need it. You have to absolutely go for it to get to that level,
yes,
don't you?
I'm so glad you asked this question.
Good. I'm glad I asked it too.
I don't.
You don't? Interesting.
And here's why. Same reason I don't believe in the myth of a tortured artist.
Yes.
I think it's bullshit.
Yeah.
You don't have to do 400 takes to get a performance.
No.
That you're telling me you suck, actually. You don't have to
work
a crew.
Would you say that to Stanley Kubrick?
I would. I look him dead in his eyeballs and be like, that's fucking ridiculous.
David Fincher.
Fincher, no, he's still alive. I love him.
Yeah,
Shout out Fincher. But in the, I mean, that's a generalization.
Yeah,
but
sure.
In the sense of like, do you have to work a crew 20 hours? I don't wear that as a badge of honor. That's part of what this movie is about. Is this exhaustion economy that we found ourselves in, where we just push ourselves to the brink of death to deliver something that you could just get fired for the next day?
Yeah.
And like, what's the point of that? Wait, what was the question? I just started going
off.
Do
you need to push yourself? Do you need that toxicity?
Here's the other thing. I think there's a misconception of there's like masculinity, great. Divine masculine, yeah, all those things. I think it's just a misinterpretation of it. And I will say, no, that's debunked, because like, look at Steph Curry.
Yeah. Yeah.
My guy's a great guy, as far as I know. It's pretty chill, never changed up. Redefined a generation of an entire sport and how it's played. And I don't know. I mean,
Well, someone like Roger Federer in tennis,
yeah,
nice guy, chatty, you know, in a changing room.
I just really feel like we've been told that you have to be an asshole to be great. And I think that's just a justification for behavior and for artists and, yeah, and athletes and celebrity that we all love. But that I don't think it has to be that way.
You said you can't see any comps for this film, which I totally agree. It's kind of totally out there on its own. But I wonder, do you watch any other movies to get anything or get in the spirit of it? Any other football movies like North Dallas 40 or Any Given Sunday, which is another Oliver Stone intense, like your
yeah.
film. It's got so much intensity. I mean, do you look at those things?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I remember Any Given Sunday was the one. I love that. That movie's so stylish. I watched it again. I was like, oh, this holds up. Like, oh my God. And Cameron Diaz is like best performance in my opinion.
Yeah.
I even tried to name one of the fake teams after the expansion team that Al Pacino is going to coach in this, but I didn't get it past legal. Shout out legal. You did good. But really just the football, I already know the machinations of a Rudy or an Air Bud or like you start off with a sports figure that can't do that has the potential but can't do it. They just need to address something else that has nothing to do with the game. They do that and then they throw the winning touchdown, so I didn't want to be beholden to that. We definitely wanted to be more in service to more of a horror,
yeah,
a subversive horror, and start maybe in a very traditional underdog, look at this kid who's got all this potential. And, you know, we're referencing Nike ads and ESPN 30 for 30 montages with family and sound bites, so that once we get to where we get to, it can be a slow descent.
Yeah. You mentioned Nike ads there, and detractors of this film, because it's kind of got mixed reviews, but the detractors have mentioned like commercials and said it's like, you know, watching one big MTV video or something like that. Mm-hmm. But to me, I mean, isn't that part and parcel of a message, kind of style mimicking form? Because it's about this, it's set in this world, in this arena that is so intense. And like the way you amp everything up, the sound design, the flash cuts, mm-hmm. everything to me kind of feeds into it, that yeah. it needs to be that maximalism. Can't say that.
Yeah, it is.
Do you agree with that? Was that the intention right from the off?
Absolutely. That wasn't a mistake. Fucking idiots. You know anything about art? What's happening in American schools? That's the point.
Yeah.
Is that we leaned all the way in. Yeah. And it is meta. It's satire. It's taking the beauty and the normalcy and making it haunting and seductive and attractive, because that's the whole point of the professional sports, is like, here's the pomp and circumstance. Here's like the fireworks and the thing, and look over here, in any kind of world that becomes commodified and dangerous.
I always think it must be infuriating for a filmmaker when you set out to do something, you achieve exactly what you set out to do, and then people, like critics, maybe respond in a way almost like, you didn't mean to do that, or it's a mistake, or why the hell is it like this? I mean,
yeah, it is, man. Interesting. It's happening in real time, mind you, where I'm trying to ignore it, but also it's like, it's funny to see people say like, it's both cringe and dark and this. What? And I'm like, what? Yeah, you just described what we tried to do. Like, that wasn't so I think it is, for whatever reason, if it's new and it's a tone of people's expectations where it was going to be a very serious, like, horror. I don't know, but I do know a lot of people also love it and get it. Yeah, and I think if you get it, you get it.
Exactly right. And obviously, there's a lot of humor in it as well. We should say that, because it's such a dark film and we keep using that word intensity. Mm-hmm. But with like Jim Jeffries in it, you know, there's a lot of black humor going on as well.
Oh, yeah. And so maybe that's why it works out here with you fucked up people in England.
Get
the sensibility. And that's part of the trick, or the seduction, or the hypnosis, that you could have Marlon make out with a fanatic and throw her head against the wall and watch her bleed out with her kids crying. And then the hard cut to Julia Fox saying, it's just a typical Tuesday. Like, I don't know. If you don't see the humor in that, then you just have bad taste.
I agree with you. I agree with you. So, final question for you, because our time's nearly up. But I mean, this obviously is a horror movie, and a very different kind of horror movie in a way. But I just wondered, are you a fan of the genre in general? And have you got a goat horror film?
I am. And oh my gosh, this is going to be funny to unpack, because I've only unpacked it till recently. One of my goated horrors, Alien.
Brilliant.
And when I break it down now, I'm like, shit, did I just try to make Alien again? Because you're stuck in the house.
Isolated.
You're isolated. You're trying to figure out who's on your side and who's not. Is in the crew, the Jim Jeffries.
Yeah.
And then the bigger evil is a corporation that is just using people as disposable for a profit instead of something that they, the corporation, is in need of. And I was just like, God damn, I guess, you know, these movies really take a deep seed in your fucking psyche. Cause,
don't even know it's there.
Yeah, but I I didn't realize until after I made the movie.
Sure. But Justin, it was an absolute pleasure talking to you. Love the film. So thank you so much for coming on the Empire podcast.
Thank you so much.
Okay, that was Justin Tipping. And now let's barrel straight into the interview with Tyreek Withers and Marlon Wayans. Wayans, of course, you know from his comedy background. He's one of the Wayans brothers and starred and co-wrote the likes of Scary Movie 1 and 2 and White Chicks. But he's also a fine dramatic actor, as seen in the likes of Requiem for a Dream and Air. Withers is very much, to echo the themes of the film, an up-and-comer, seen in the likes of Atlanta and this year's I Know What You Did Last Summer remake. But he's set for the big time, and all, as he confirms in his interview, without offering up a blood sacrifice. Which is nice. Oh, and he and Wayans talk about their age difference, the film's themes, getting pumped in the gym, not like that, horror movies, and much, much more. Enjoy.
Marlon Wayans, Tyreek Withers, welcome to the Empire podcast. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, bro. Thanks for having me.
This film is so extreme. I mean, I was watching it just sipping an oat latte, and I came out the other side of it feeling bruised, battered, punished. I mean, how was it to film? Was it as extreme to do it as it was to watch it?
You felt bruised, battered, all the extreme.
Latte? That's amazing.
On the other side of your latte, you was... I think it was, to me, like one of the most amazing experiences I had on a set. Justin Tipping and Jordan Peele, I think the two of them together allowed me to have a freedom that I haven't had on a film set. And I really embraced and appreciated it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I say same for me. The level of fun we had in between takes, you know, on and off set, I think that juxtaposed to how intense the movie is. You need somebody like Marlon to really bring the joy, the jokes, the laughter. Try to keep up with him when it comes to jokes. You know, I have a few dad jokes. Start opening for his stand-up shows and whatnot. But yeah, it was a fun, creatively, like, satisfying experience where it pushed me to a certain level where, because Justin Tippin, he really took some big, bold swings for this one, and, you know, produced by Jordan Peele. So, you know, the essence of his art is flowing throughout all the filmmakers and actors and crew members for this project.
We'll talk about the psychological side in a minute and the themes, but I want to start off with the physicality, because you guys are ripped in this film. I mean, you're like Olympian gods. So tell me, how did you get in shape? I mean, that must have been months and months of...
I had breasts before we began, man. I had a belly and breasts. Lots of red wine and steaks over quarantine. And it was just time to get in shape. And God gave me this project, and he knows that I'd dive in and commit 150%. And to me, it breathed new life into me as Marlon. So I'm grateful for Isaiah.
Yeah. And I'd say for me, you know, seeing Marlon really attack the gym, you know, being twice my age.
Get that.
No, but like, it sounds like I'm poking fun, but like, yeah, it was like...
Sounds like I'm poking fun and he's going to die way before me, but I'm not. But I'm,
it was like a peer, you know, having him like really show up and show out, and like the competition was necessary for this film, especially the character dynamic and, you know, working out six times a week, twice a day, doing mental like exercises. You know, there's a lot of meditation, a lot of red light therapy, a lot of journaling, a lot of reading. And then that affects the, you know, the performance, you know. Yeah. And I think while you're shooting, you have to keep up the physique. You have to keep up the proper throwing mechanics and emotionally explore your character and then the scenes to come. So, yeah, I think the difficulty just helped with the performance because, you know, physically getting in shape helped me get in shape other ways as well.
Sure. Does it get competitive on set? Because I once talked to Josh Brolin about Only the Brave, that firefighting film, and he was saying all the young guys were kind of pumping weights between takes, and Josh was sort of twice the age of most of his co-stars, and he was pumping even bigger weights than they were, and they were like, wow. I mean, was it a bit like that with you guys? I mean, because it's not just you two, it's quite a lot of you.
I know
there,
for
like,
me as the elder statesman, I got to preserve my energy. I did all the work beforehand.
Right.
And so, you know, sometimes between takes, if I didn't get a workout, and we go in that little gym that they had on set and we get a quick workout in. But, you know, it was more about preservation and the mental state that I had to keep myself in. But and I felt bad for him because he had to throw a lot. Yeah. Yeah. He had ice on his arm, and I'd be like, poor baby.
Waking up from a nap. No, but I think there's a quiet competition, too. Like, the physicality, you know, as a quarterback, there's a competition to, like, really look like a real quarterback. Yeah. And I didn't approach it with that mature mindset because preserving the temple, I didn't really do that. I threw my arm out first day.
Wow.
You know, and so a lot of the scenes you see, it's real pain and frustration that I'm witnessing. So, which helped with the character, but also I think the competition, the quiet competition where like he'll bring it to a scene and you're like, oh, they're going to flip the cameras to me. I have to like lock in. And
yeah,
there's this one scene where he went really big and like hit his chest hard and like he got bruised from that. And then Justin's like, all right, let's see what you're going to bring. And then, but like, I think the cool like thing about a partner.
That's
like
when you
this,
beat my face.
No.
Like it, 3 million times.
No, I was like, how can I best support the scene and you as an artist where you, that was your choice. And, you know, I juxtaposed that, like that, boldness to like just the stillness. And I think that scene is so powerful because it's two people feeling the same emotion but differently. And you know, I think that competition just helps the performance in all scenes.
One of the mantras in the film is no guts, no glory.
Yeah.
Now, I wondered, I mean, we see it in so many films like Black Swan, Whiplash, that to get to the top of a profession you need to be hungry, you need to be driven, you've got to really go for it 100%. I mean, do you think it's possible to get to the very elite level without doing that?
No.
Yeah.
I think if you are, you can visit the top of the mountain, but you're going to slide off. If you want to stay there, it's going to take work. And I've been here 35 years and I'm still climbing because I am relentless in my work ethic and I'm not done. I'm not there. I never made it because I'm going to always stay a student and I'm always going to put everything I got into every ounce of every performance. I don't care if that's on stage. I don't care if it's writing. I don't care if it's producing. I don't care if it's acting dramatic. I don't care if it's a character. I'm going to give it everything because I don't know where it is.
I was going to ask if there's any similarity with the acting profession because you guys, to get to the top, it's the same thing. You've got to like sacrifice.
But and something I tell him is like, look, you can get to the top. You can be the guy, but rare guys are the guy and stays the guy. There's only been maybe a handful of guys that was the guy. Like Tom Cruise has always been the guy.
Yeah.
But if you don't think Tom Cruise is possessed in terms of his work ethic and what he does, and he gets better. How do you get better after all this time? Because he stays a student. Eddie Murphy, you know, guys that just have been here at that level for that long, it got to be the work.
So Tyreek, I mean, you've had a great year. You've had, I know what you did last summer and now this. I mean, are you making blood sacrifices to kind of get there?
No, absolutely not. Let's put that on record. You know, I do like my steak medium rare, so maybe that's part of it. I'm just grateful. You know, everybody sees that finished product, but they don't see the decades of figuring it out, you know, the pain, the suffering that, you know, life throws at you. And I think that's the beauty of art. You just take all that and then pour it into a project. And, you know, I got to film a movie, Reminders of Him, this year. And so that was a whole different ball game where you live in that quiet vulnerability as a man. But yeah, I'm just super grateful because it's been, yeah, a work in progress. And now they're finally coming out. And, you know, through prayer, through building a village, having a village and really locking in on the craft. I'm just grateful that people are able to finally see the work.
And there's a lot of themes in this film swirling around, sort of big meaty themes like cult of celebrity. There's religion in there. There's toxic masculinity. There's so many things. I mean, how much do you guys dig into that or do you just sort of do what's on the page? I mean, are you kind of working through these themes with Justin?
I think some of it is working through, some of it with Justin, but I think the other part of it is, you know, I think you have to have your own interpretation of the text as an artist and, you know, find out where you live and breathe and coincide with the character so that you can, you know, bring all those feelings truthfully to the surface.
Yeah.
So a lot of mine, I delved into like the vulnerability and the human nature of what an arrogant goat like Isaiah would be. And I found that he's really insecure.
Yeah.
And when I pull from there, you get textures, you get layers. There's something beneath what that bravado is saying. And it's vulnerable.
And obviously, I mean, the cabal who kind of run the Saviors, who run this American football team, they're all kind of middle-aged white dudes. So I just wondered, I mean, is there a theme there, or am I seeing too much into it, a sort of football as exploitation, even modern-day slavery in a way?
I think sports, period. I think every industry can be looked at that way. And I think every player, you know, everybody's so disposable nowadays. Oh, you get injured, somebody else comes along. And it's like when it comes to the big contracts, I'm like, yeah, pay those athletes. Pay them. Because the big companies are making money, they should make money too. Same with actors. If, you know, the studios are making a lot of money, pay them, because they're giving their blood, sweat, and tears to this thing, especially like football, is their bodies, their brains. It's a lot. So I'm glad that college kids are starting to make money and make money on their jerseys. And I think it's fair.
Yeah.
And I think it's good to attack the establishment.
Now, Marlon, it's great to see you in a dramatic role. I mean, I remember you in Requiem for a Dream, which I absolutely adored. I mean, do you kind of get something different out of these roles to what you do in your comedy and stuff like Scary Movie?
Yeah, definitely. It's a whole different world. It's all energy, right? Like when you're doing Scary Movie and doing comedy, comedy is up here.
Yeah.
Everything's up there. You're thinking, it's a desperate, desperate medium. And I come from sketch and I come from parody. Comedy itself is a desperate thing, but when you do sketch, stand-up, and parody, everything got to be funny all the time. So when I get to be still, and I take all that desperation, I just get to own it and hone it and then focus it and then put it out. Like literally, and I could just be vulnerable and I could just feel it's a vacation from comedy. And not that it's, and it's easier for me to do drama because I got a lot of pain. There's a lot that I run from that I don't deal with because comedians were sick people.
Yeah.
Something terrible happens to me. The first thing I go is, what's funny about this?
Yeah.
Right? I don't even deal with the pain. I take the pulp, I throw it away somewhere, and I don't mess with that until I do a drama. And it's like, hey, remember that stuff that you didn't talk about? Remember that stuff that you was making fun of? Let's deal with that.
So and you get to pour it out. Is it cathartic when you finally
absolutely.
Do? Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay, and final question, guys, because our time is up. But this is obviously a horror movie, and I just wondered, are you fans of the genre, and do you have a goat do you have a goat horror movie?
No, before we get into that, one thing that I remember you saying that was powerful was like, am I chasing something or am I running from something? And I think that is the existential question, especially from an artist. And I think we're all mosaics of our past trauma and pain, life, you know, the good experiences, the bad. And seeing Marlon really pour his blood, his sweat, his tears into this this role has been something I'll hold to my heart dearly. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, he brings such light to the set, but I think it takes a certain amount of darkness to like really weather throughout life to be that bright. So I'm grateful to have witnessed that. So I just wanted to
put your blood out there too, brother.
Yeah.
So the horror question.
Wait, but you had a question. Horror question. Okay.
Yeah.
So for me, I made a living making fun of horror movies. Like my biggest movie, Scary Movie, $300 million worldwide beast, $1 billion franchise. I'm about to go do part six. So yes, I also a haunted house. I started a whole nother franchise based on horror movies. I love horror movies. I'm a fan. You have to be a fan if you're going to make fun of them. I think the greatest form of flattery is mockery. So me doing parodies about horror movies, because horror and comedy share a similar rhythm. So where it's tension, 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 scare.
Release.
And comedy is tension, 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 laugh.
Yeah.
So I'll always tether the two together. My favorite horror movie. I like the new ones nowadays, man. I really enjoy the new generation and how they're, you know, expressing in horror. You know, movies like, what's his name? Hereditary,
and, yeah, it's great.
And Heretic, the one with
the Heretic, yeah.
Yeah, that was really good. Talk to me was really good. Oh, I love Talk to Me. Yeah. Yes, there's some really great movies. So,
yeah. I love horror because it's able to articulate specific themes in exaggerated and nuanced ways that, like, it could really, like, even this film, it's a psychological horror. So the themes of, you know, what you were talking about are delivered to an audience. And I think you're able to discuss that. And the cool thing about horror as well is, like, you should mostly digest it with other people. If you watch horror films alone, you're just, you know, one of a kind. But yeah, I think you get to experience the scares with a group, and things that might affect you might not affect me. And I get to live in that. And it's just a joyful experience, especially as an empath.
And what's your goat horror movie, just to finish?
My Life. My life.
My goat is Freddy Krueger. Oh. My goat horror movies, Nightmare on Elm Street Part 1 and 2.
Yeah.
Scared the hell out of me.
If I had to pick one, though, other than My Life, Scream. I think one is so, like, iconic because I watched it so
I think Freddy Krueger would kick Ghostface's behind. Because Ghostface got to sleep.
Yeah.
You're showing your ages here. I'm the same age as you, Mark. And it's Elm Street for me as well. Yes, thanks, guys, so much.
I appreciate you. Wonderful questions. Thank you.
Okay, that was Marlon Wayans and Tyreek Withers and indeed Jamie Graham. And that is it for this Him interview special. The film is out right now in cinemas across the country, so do go check it out. Just make sure to take your helmet off first and leave your goat at the door. Thanks for listening. See you next time. Bye-bye.